Hello everyone, and welcome to week 3 of our wire workshop. Let's see, we'll go ahead and get started this week with a quick peek at the agenda. And we're going to start off with just kind of our questions to see where everybody is. Oh goodness, no, we aren't going to do the SDAS review. I forgot to take that off. We are going to have the presentation with the discussion about, you know, what we're going to learn about tonight, which happens to be grief. Review the homework, and then we'll close. So, without further ado, unless there are any questions about the agenda.
I'm fine.
No, it's good. Let's carry on.
Okay. Well, then, here are the questions that we have for this week. Who would like to go first for the grilling?
For the questions? Oh, how is your week?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Verlan. I keep forgetting. I need to let you know when I change. I'm on slide 3.
That's right. That's okay. That's okay. I found it. Yeah. Let's see. This past week. I don't know. I think one of the things that happened for me this past week that I feel more hopeful. You know, I've been in this process since my ex left me. It would be 2 years in April, and you know, for the first 6 months I was sort of in denial, and then 6 months after she left, I found out she was dating this man named Paul. And that's when it became really real for me, you know. And so that's been about a year and a half ago now. And that's when my real struggle happened. And then just a couple of weeks ago, she filed for divorce. Actually, we didn't know that because we were married in Canada, in 2004, we didn't know that we were legally married in the States once it became a federal law here. So the day I found out that I was really married in the States, I also received the paperwork for the divorce. You know, things have happened for us in a little bit different, you know, kind of a rotation, I guess. Anyway, you know, after a year and a half or two, I keep thinking maybe I need to do some dating. You know, I need to get out and meet some other people, and especially because I focus so much on my ex and her new man friend, you know, it's like I need to have some significant relationships. And I don't mean necessarily getting married, but just dating, so that I can have a focus for myself and not spend all my time and energy focusing on them. And then focusing on what I feel like I quote unquote don't have. And so anyhow, I belong to a thing called eHarmony. It's like a dating site thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a woman this week, a true that. I mean, we're just chatting back and forth. That's all we're doing. Just getting to know each other as friends. But it has helped give me another focus. So I'm not thinking so much, you know. Hugo, you talked last week about just not thinking about what they're doing, you know. And so it helped me a whole lot this week to have somebody else that I'm chatting with each evening so that I don't think about what they're doing. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this week has been a better week for me, and consequently, I feel like I'm able to more let her go. You know, just let her go. Let her go. Yeah.
And, that's huge.
Yeah. And I'll let them go ahead and lead their life, and I hope they're happy together, but I'm going to go ahead and create my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still a turning point this past week. Somehow. And I think part of it's the group, too. You know, when Hugo said that the very first week, Hugo, that helped me so much. When, you know, if she wants to know, you have to let her go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, glad that helped you. Glad that it helped somebody.
Yeah. How about you, Hugo? Anything this past week?
Luckily this week wasn't so bad for me with respect to the tornado, but what happened this week also was on the Thursday when we had our last the Friday after we've had our last how can I say, group meeting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I got the letter from the attorneys, or I think I got subpoena to the court where when the actual divorce is going to take place, and it's dated for the 7th of March now.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
So what time, when of March? The
2nd? The 7th.
The
7th.
The 7th.
Okay. 7th. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, I think I didn't feel as bad as I thought I would. For some reason or not, I actually thought it was, I took it better than I thought I would, you know. So, I'm actually on the ones, you're sort of torn into two parts, you know. The one part of you feels that it's good to carry on and move on, and the other part is sad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I am more on the, you know, I wasn't like down and out and sad the whole day because of that.
Mm-hmm.
At least. Mm-hmm. But yes, she went out again with her friend. I mean, on Valentine's Day she spent with him, and obviously I don't know what you guys do have Valentine's Day on.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You did have Valentine's Day on Sunday, ne? Okay.
Right.
And that also didn't affect me that much. I wasn't fear because, you know, the previous time I was thinking about them the whole time, and this time initially I started thinking about it, and then after a while I didn't even, you know, I thought about other things, so I managed to dodge the tornado.
So
I think this week for me was better, I think, and I realized a few things when I read through the work tonight, the homework tonight as well, and obviously we'll talk about that later when we get there, but I think this week was better for me. And well, it's always good having this group after this group discussion. I always feel better, so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you go to sleep. How you go to sleep, Milan, after a discussion like this?
Yes.
Because I'm ready to go when we end the group. You know, I'm ready to start my day. So, yeah.
Wow. I am
good.
Thrilled you both had such good weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really am. I mean, despite, you know, getting all the paperwork, Hugo, you still were able to, you know, touch on some of the more negative emotions, but then allow, you know, say, okay, that's enough for now, and then to move on. That was great.
Yeah, one of the things I got a bit scared that I, you know, I'm not going to get the book, and I'm going to miss out on the experience of the group discussions, because you don't, you know, the previous time I could not manage to do that, but thanks a lot the copies or the scans that you sent for me for the of the chapters that can go through the next 2 weeks. But yes, that really saved me.
Good. I'm so glad. I was so frustrated when I read your notice. Like, what? He still doesn't have it. How horrible. So I was like, okay, how else? I was like, oh, I'll just scan it. So I'm glad I figured out a way to get it to you.
You have to realize, you know, Africa's postal service and those kind of things are not, it's not the USA. The stuff here, really, it's going at a snail pace. And you have to have a lot of patience. So anyway,
I want to ask you a question, Hugo. Did you grow up in South Africa?
Yes, I did. I was born here, and I grew up here.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know if you had maybe were born in England and went there, or that you actually grew up in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. No, I grew up here.
Okay.
I was born there, and I grew up here. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're the first person I ever met from South Africa. So, thank you.
Okay.
Well, the next question is, did either of you have a chance to connect with any of the other group members this week?
I didn't. I didn't.
I also did not. Karen, I should have probably. I think I just had a lot of issues to deal on my own, but at this stage I couldn't. Yeah, it's just as if I didn't get the time and around it. I did think about the guys a lot, and I hope. Well, I just hope that they join us next week, the next time around.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope so too. Well, you know, one of the things that you both kind of brought up is the value of being here, you know, present and having the conversation and getting a little bit different perspective. But I think a big piece of it is also feeling understood, you know, is that everybody here gets what you're going through. You know, in my case, you know, I've been through it before, but y'all are going through it, you know, someone else who understands the situation. And that's just so valuable. And if you can, you know, even see each other just a quick email, you know, during the week, you know, just anything. Hugo, I think you started off great with that hilarious helium beer drinking. I still laugh about that. I was making my bed this morning laughing about it.
I think that being understood has been really helpful to me, because I get the impression from my ex sometimes from things that she texts that she kind of thinks I'm kind of abnormal for the feelings I'm having, you know, or kind of crazy for the feelings I'm having. And when I read the book and have our discussions, I'm so confirmed that all the feelings and reactions and thoughts that I'm having are very normal for a person going through divorce. And so I feel like, you know what, I'm on track here. Even though it's painful, I'm on track. I'm having the right feelings, if you will. Everything I'm feeling is okay. I'm not crazy, and I'm not, you know, behind the times or whatever. Everything I'm feeling is okay.
It's completely okay. And, you know, everybody gets through divorce at their own pace. It typically takes a person that's the dumpy a little bit longer to get over it than the person who's the dumper. And so it makes sense to me, you know, that your ex is moving on. And you're just starting to now.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was the one that chose to leave, not you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think she chose to leave 4 years ago. Even when we were still together, she had already chosen to leave. Just didn't have the guts to do it yet.
Yeah, which means she had 2 years extra head start.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that for you too, Hugo? You feel like your life has moved on quicker than you?
Yes, it's exactly the same. Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, she's like left, although she hasn't physically left, you know. And that's what I would say. What's keeping me a little bit back from, I've done the assessment, Karen. I'm willing to share that with the whole group. I don't have a problem with that. Because, I also don't have a problem with the guys, giving me, constructive criticism, because that's the way I know I grow, you know. I grow personally, because people see things in my, most of the time you're blind to your own faults, and you don't.
Yeah.
You don't really see that. So I don't have a problem sharing that with the guys in this group, so that, as we go along, people can tell me, hey, but look, I think you could have done this or whatever, that sort of, you could have handled it better in this way, that sort of thing. But anyway, I can't remember what I wanted to say now, but I think my wife, she already left, a long time ago. And the other thing I wanted to say was, because I'm still legally married to her, I don't feel it's good for me to at this stage, try and arrange dates with other women and things like that, because I feel like I don't set the right example to my children. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like doing that. And obviously that's not the only reason. I think, Karen, you have previously alluded to, if you are being betrayed, you might be, a lot more careful going into another, relationship, that sort of thing. So obviously I think I am also sort of very sensitive of trying out, new relationships, because of the one I've been hurting, this one, so I will be very careful, going into the next one, that sort of thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
That makes a whole lot of sense. And, that's another piece of healing from divorce, that everybody takes at a different pace. And you have to listen to yourself, and know what's right for you and what's the right pace for you, and trust it.
Yeah.
You're the type of guy, Hugo, that does the self-examination, and challenges yourself in what your thoughts are. And so I don't worry about you, choosing to hide instead of at some point being willing to take a chance and go out on a date.
I need to do healing first, and then, if I go out now, I'll just go and make, more of a mess, that sort of thing,
Yeah.
That's what I think. And, okay, feel as though that's what I feel.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it's not difficult for me to strike up a conversation with anybody, actually, you know, even somebody of the opposite sex or so. I don't have a problem doing that, but, you know, going deeper and getting involved and that kind of thing, at this stage, it's difficult for me. Okay.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, what did you all think of Chapter 4 on adaptation?
I think that was a very good description of what actually happened in my relationship, I think. The way I've checked myself is I think I'm one of these guys that are, how can I say, over responsible, because they described me there. And I think that's the way our relationship went. My wife just went more and more irresponsible and totally no care and all those kind of things. And I'm not like that. And that's the way I suppose it goes, you know, the more and more sort of responsible you want to be and you expect her to be, the less she is, you know, that sort of thing. And it just like went downhill the whole time, you know. There was a definite point where this happened when she started working with this person, which, you know, he's like the owner of a business, and she started working for him, and they started working long hours, and this is when this thing started, you know. So I can identify the point where this thing happened. So yes, I think it's a valuable. I sort of see there are some that I also see, you know, that I'm not really the perfectionist in all ways. In certain of my ways, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, but not really everything. But I totally identify with an over-responsible person. That's the one, you know, if I can pinpoint myself, that's me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so when you looked at the adaptive behavior homework sheet,
yes,
what was doing the exercise associated with over-responsible?
Yeah, it's very difficult to ask. You know, that's the one thing I checked, you know, when in history going back. I'm always the person that did things for her, you know. I really never asked her to do a lot of things for me, you know. And you know, I actually, like, it challenged me, you know. I asked her to do something for me. and she did, and I was surprised, you know, she did it. That's the one thing. And the other thing is you need to say no, you know, to somebody. And I did that as well. That's the other thing that I do, you know, is I tend to think, okay, look, I'm this, you know, I can do everything, you know. And I probably can, but I don't have the capacity or let's call it the time to do it for everybody. I can't be everything for everybody, you know. I can't save everybody or that type of thing. So, yes, I said no to somebody, and that was also, you know, it sort of like went totally against my principles. So I did that, and I also, yeah, like I said, I asked my wife to do something for me.
Just as we did.
Yes. I, in this, because I had the adaptive worksheet, and it tells me that look, this is the yes, I did it in this week.
Okay.
In, you know, since we had our discussions or our last group, yes, I did that.
Mm-hmm. So, did you notice any particular emotion that came up besides hesitancy when you did either?
Yeah, it felt like this is not, you know, this is not really my, this is not really me, you know. But what I think is that if I continue doing it, it will, you know, I can actually do this, you know. But yeah, it felt like, wow, this is difficult. This is really difficult. You shouldn't do this. It went totally against my normal reaction or my normal way of doing things. It's difficult. It's really difficult doing it.
Did it feel out of control in any way?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how it felt for me, too. You guys probably remember I struggle with being over-responsible at times. Okay, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's something that once you become aware of it, you can choose to work on it. And you can, you know, adjust and choose when to feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah, it really does feel uncomfortable, and you, like you say, out of control, and you, but I know if I can work at it, I will, you know, I'll get better, or definitely better.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think is the beauty of the homework sheet, is it gives you some ideas as to where to start, so that, you know, as part of your healing, you can repair some of the habits that you got into with your marriage that probably won't serve you long term.
Yes. And that's a good thing. I really enjoy that. That's why I think it's a very good book, you know, because it really showed me that, you know, this is what you've been doing all the time. And I didn't realize that. I didn't realize I was doing this. So I was taking up more responsibility than I should, and I don't need to. I mean, why do I need to take up all the responsibility? And even now after our marriage, I do that. I still keep on doing that, you know, and I shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, now that you're aware of it, right, you'll be able to make different decisions as you choose.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing I also realized is that the whole the nurturing thing, you know, because you tend to think that you give yourself, like that they say, you give yourself away, and that's what I also I should stop doing that. I never realized that I was doing that. And that was what I did, you know. So I really think neglected myself, you know, for somebody else. And that's actually sad.
Yeah, it is
very sad. Yeah.
But I'm so glad you recognize it.
Yeah. No, well, I'm glad I got this book so I can... It's really helped me a lot. No, it just shows you your blind spots. It just shows you all your blind spots that you have. That's good. I really like that. Valan, how did you experience
the chapter?
Chapter 4. Where did you?
Well, I the emotion that I identified with was that rejection, and I realized from my childhood that whether or not it was reality or not, I experienced a sense of rejection and kind of being second class or not being good enough. And so I think when I got into my relationship with my ex, you know, I was looking for the love that I felt like I didn't receive in childhood. And my adaptive behavior was to be needy, you know, and to be a victim. Because if I was needy and victim, then I could kind of coerce her into taking care of me, you know. And she grew up as a caretaker, you know.
Oh.
So she saw my weaknesses and my neediness, and she's like, okay, I can take care of that, you know. And so I had the realization that our relationship was sort of dim from the start, because I was needy and a victim, and she was the savior, the caretaker. And then I think what happened was she got tired of being the caretaker and was resentful about that, you know, and realized that that's not the way she wanted to live. She didn't want to continue to be a caretaker, not just of me, but of anybody in her life. She wanted to change that adaptive behavior in herself. And so, you know, but I just had this realization that, you know, it's no wonder we didn't make it, because we both kind of, you know, I tried to get my needs met, and she was trying to get her needs met. And it left for a very imbalanced, and, you know, neither one of us could grow. Neither one of us could grow as long as we stayed with each other, because we would be trapped in her being a caretaker and me being needy. And one of the things that I'm learning about being single is that I can rely on and love myself, you know. And that,
you know,
I'm kind of forced to do it, but it's also an opportunity for me to learn to take care of myself and not be needy.
Yeah. For me, I think as a child, I think it was a learned behavior, because I don't know why. I just think it is because I did get, enough attention and love and these kind of things. But like the guy say, your love tank, you always maybe look for something in a different manner or whatever, and then you start doing things. And so it's a for me, I think it was a learned behavior, you know. So, yeah, but, yeah, it's like you say, at the end of the chapter, no wonder you think, no wonder this thing didn't work out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's also what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here with my mouth hanging open. You guys are just blowing me away. No one else who's ever taken this class with me over all the years that I've taught it has ever grasped this chapter 4 as quickly and thoroughly as the two of you have.
Hmm. Hey, we're pretty good, you know.
You really, I mean, it's really amazing the information that you've both pulled out of reading the chapter, about yourself, right? So the chapter was a trigger for you guys to do deep dives into yourself. And Verlan, I can't believe you're the same woman that I talked to, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago? Or
really?
4 or 5 weeks ago now? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big difference.
Mm-hmm.
You guys,
oh,
wow.
Good.
Wow. Well, now I have to ask, Verlan, how did your adaptive behavior homework go?
I didn't even have the courage to ask anybody to do that.
Oh.
To have a friend or loved one write a list of 10 or more things they really like about you. Read the list until you believe it. I wasn't even able to ask somebody to do that. I would feel embarrassed to do that. It would be like I would be forcing them to make up things about me. You know? And so
yeah.
I didn't even want to impose on anybody. let alone being able to read them myself and believe them.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting, though, in juxtaposition to that, is that you chose to get on eHarmony this week. Which, to me, is a sign of tremendous strength and courage.
I asked one of my, I didn't, obviously I couldn't ask my ex to fill in the list of the things that they like about me, so I asked one of my boys to do that, and you know what? And you know what? They came up with a lot of the things that I do to take care of, you know, to be overprotective. That's one of the things that I see on the list, you know? So that's when I also realized, you know, I actually need to not be, I need to, you know, to let them be, you know, they need to spread their own wings and, you know, make their own mistakes and all kind of things. So I realized from that I'm a good parent. I'm not that bad, but I need to let go. But
how old are your children, Hugo?
The oldest one is 19, the second one is 17, and the third one is now 16.
Oh my gosh, our children are so much the same. I have an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 14-year-old.
Okay.
So we've got them about the same place.
So from that, I realized that, you know, I obviously that there's things that I can improve there as well. You know, this thing doesn't only work in one dimension, one relationship. It works through your whole relationship. And obviously, the things that you learn your children, they tend to how can I say, propagate that in their relationship. So, yes, that's another thing I realized. But okay.
You guys are so good. Star students. Well, are y'all ready to move on to the next section? Which is...
Yes.
Okay. You say it with enthusiasm, and then we're going to talk about grief, which isn't necessarily an enthusiastic topic.
It's a good thing that we talk about it. We need to get over it.
Yes, absolutely right. So, we're going to start off with this kind of big question. because grief, of course, is about mourning losses, right? And divorce, the end of a relationship, is usually comprised of a whole bunch of losses. So it's not just the relationship, but there's all kinds of, you know, additional things that are lost at the same time. And so I thought that if we started off talking about all the different things that are lost instead of, you know, the obvious, which is what everybody thinks of when they hear somebody's getting divorced, is, okay, yeah, they're just not married anymore. But there's a whole lot more to it, at least there was for me. And so I was wondering what y'all thought of sharing some of the losses you had.
Yeah. Well, you obviously, you lose the friendship of, and I mean, when you're married and you have children, you can't get rid of your spouse and, you know, never see them again. It's not, cannot work like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So you have to have some kind of a working relationship. So the depth and how can I say, you've got that relationship. It's like your soulmate is gone, but or not dead, but it's still there, but you cannot access it, you know, that sort of thing. You don't have access.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing. The other thing is the family, the whole family, how can I call it, magic? I don't know how you can call that, but
mm-hmm.
the whole family togetherness, that belonging thing, that's, it's gone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not totally, but it's really not the same, you know, because you have your relationships with children, but the whole, it's like a family that's broken up. And then that, obviously there are financial and other material losses, but which I'm not that concerned about, or it is not my, it's not the biggest impact on me, but yeah, what else? Obviously other friends as well, because you had friends together, and your friends, they take sides, and they, some of them go with your wife, and others, some of them go, remains with you, that sort of thing. So that's also a loss. Verlaine, I don't know if you can help me here, but...
Well, part of a loss for me was losing her family. You know, I felt close, especially to one of her sisters and to her mom, and now I don't have them either. You know, they're lost, and I miss them. And a loss for me, because I was the needy one, and Beth was the one who took care of me. You know, I lost her input when I want to make decisions, you know, or I want to do something, and I don't have her insight. She's a very smart and capable person, and I often relied on her expertise in things, not just with the children, but other things too, and I've lost that. I have to do it myself, and that's kind of scary because... I don't trust myself always, you know, because I put my trust in her regarding decisions and stuff. Yeah. And then I lost this dream. Now, I had this dream that we would grow old together, and, you know, I see us sitting in rocking chairs on the front porch, you know, and just at the time when my children are starting to grow up and need less and less direct care, and we could have more time with each other instead of just focusing on raising little children, just at the time when we were ready to go that next step, it's over.
Yeah.
We didn't get the chance to enjoy each other once again after the children were
moving on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's like you've lost the future, you know?
Yeah.
Now you've lost the future.
Yeah.
That sort of...
Just when we could have had more time together.
Yeah.
And then I feel jealous, of course, because she's spending that time with somebody else. And
so that
gets in there, you know. What could have been our time is now given to someone else. So that's.
No, I feel exactly the same in that regard. The only thing is I've been thinking that, you know, I'm going to get over that. Once I'm divorced, my wife's still staying in my home at this stage. So she's getting her own apartment built now, and end of March, she will move out. Okay,
she's living in your home right now.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
So it's not easy for me. So
my goodness.
I just try to retain or maintain a good relationship with her, and you know, get her move her out as soon as her place is ready. So as soon as we officially divorced, I'm obviously I'm not going to break off all contact, but. What's actually strange in our case is that her family, I'm not even scared of losing them because I have a very close relationship with them, and they've actually sided against her, you know.
That's
because of what she's been doing and so on. They're totally against that.
You know, I didn't lose Beth's family because they stepped away from me. Her sister and her mom were trying to maintain contact with me, but at some point, maybe about 10 months ago or maybe a year ago, I just told both of them that I couldn't do that because that was too difficult for me because I wanted to maintain a relationship with them because I care about them, but I also realized I wanted to maintain a relationship with them so that I can have some kind of direct line to her. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they would tell me things about her that she wouldn't be telling me. You know? And I knew that was not healthy for me. So I told them not to contact me anymore.
I can go and visit my in-laws and we can talk about a lot of other things besides my wife. I don't have a problem carrying on with the relationship with them, you know. I really, because they are actually good people. I really enjoy them, and
I don't feel like I could talk with them without bringing her up.
It's
just
that's
good for you.
Yeah. Look, I obviously it's not. I try not to talk about my wife with them. Okay, that's one of the things I try not to do. I'd rather talk about my kids and what I'm doing and what are they doing, etc. And I mean they know that what my wife has done and what she's busy with and all those kind of things. Although their relationship between my wife and her mother and family is not as good as my relationship with them. So my relationship is actually better, because they've had lots of fights because they really nailed her for what she was doing, you know. And in the beginning, I didn't even realize this thing was happening, you know, because I trusted my wife. I said, well, and my mother-in-law asked me, but what is she doing with this guy? Why is she hanging around so much with him, you know? That's not right. You don't do that when you're married, you know? And then I said, well, I don't know. And I started reading books and all sorts of things, and then I realized that there is definitely something wrong here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we are now. So, but anyway, they opened my eyes to this thing. But anyway, yeah. Sorry, we are, aren't we getting off track here, Karen?
No, you're not, actually, because you're talking about how you're dealing with and how you have dealt with the loss, one of the losses that you both experienced, and how you're navigating these kind of waters of grief that we're talking about. So,
yeah.
No, you guys are doing perfect.
Okay. Yeah, so I still maintain the relationship, and I know, you know, in the past, how many times that I saw them without my wife, you know. She never went with me there. She was, she was out having, she was having a date with this guy, you know. So, so obviously I have a good relationship with him, and I can carry on with that. Maybe in future, I don't know if that's going to be difficult. If I do get involved in another relationship, and I don't know, maybe Karen has some more wisdom about this. I don't know how that's going to work. You know, if I meet somebody else, and what impact that's going to have on my in-laws. I don't know.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
You know, my suspicion is... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, please, Verlaine. It's much more important that you guys have this conversation than that I butt in. Please.
Well, I was just thinking one of the issues I feel with my in-laws is that, my ex-in-laws, is that I suspect that they are happy that she's with a man, and that they are, whether they would ever say it to me, but they are happy that she is not gay, and that she finally, you know, got her head together, and, you know, and she's with a man. So I feel like they feel bad. So I don't feel.
Well, man, I'm feeling pulled to challenge you on it. Are you okay if I say something?
Sure.
Is that what you think, or is that truly what you're picking up from them?
Well, I know her father always wanted her not to be gay. I mean, he more or less said that. And he wanted her to find a man enough. You know, her mom was always very nice to me, and she never said anything like that. But, you know, this man that Beth is with is also Catholic, and since she left me, she quote-unquote went back to the church. And so her mother told me, you know, that she's so happy that she's back in the church. So I think they kind of blame me for sort of taking her out of the church. And now she's found somebody. Now she's found somebody who's in the church, and she's gotten back on track. So I think they're really happy about
the fact that he's a man and the fact that he's Catholic, and that has kind of gotten herself back on track by being with a man, by being Catholic again. You know, so I think that kind of TV is, you know, the problem. You know, I influence Beth to be gay, and I influence Beth to use the truth. It's another happy that she says.
I'm sorry, that's just another layer of pain for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what happened, Verlaine, but while you were telling us about that, your phone connection has become very muddy.
Really?
Can you not hear me? Now it's better.
Maybe I just wasn't talking clearly.
Okay. It sounded almost like you were talking through something instead of directly into the microphone, at least on my end. I don't know if you go, did you have the same thing, or was it just me?
I had the same thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had my head down, and I bet I just wasn't talking clearly into it. Did you understand what I said, though?
I did, and it sounded horrific because of, basically, it sounds like the entire time of your relationship, they were there, but then at the same time giving out these vibes of they didn't like it, and that it was your fault.
And her mother so much said to me after we broke up, and I was talking one time with her, she said, you know, you would really benefit if you would give back to the church.
Mm.
You know. And I basically said to her, I appreciate your concern, but I will never go back and be Catholic again. I just can't. That's not who I am. That's not what I feel. Yeah. But, so I think that's sort of a separation there, too. As well as the fact that I'm gay. Now Beth isn't. You know. But I still miss them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we miss our family even when they have all kinds of warts and bumps and opinions.
So it's better for me not to worry about it, but just go on, you know, and
Well, I think y'all have come up with a really fabulous list. I'm going to read them all to you one more time, since I know, Verlaine, you can't see them. So, the friendship of your spouse is lost, or at least you have no more access to it in the same way. The whole family magic or belonging or togetherness is gone, or at least not the same.
Yeah.
It's broken. There are financial and other material losses. There are friends outside of the family that are lost. The in-laws may or may not be lost. Your spouse's input and insight for making decisions or just when you want to do something different. The dream of growing old together is lost. The whole idea of a future is lost, at least the future that you thought you had, so you have to recreate it. There's one loss that I don't see up here that I'm going to throw out there. For a lot of people, there's some kind of status or belonging within society if you have someone that you belong with. And a lot of people feel that as a pretty strong loss.
Yeah, well, I'm single now again, so probably a loss, yes. You're right.
Well, and I sense that loss in a little bit different way. You know, I always was proud that we were a gay couple and we were together for so many years, and I felt like that was a sign to other people that, see, gay people can be faithful and can stay together, and we're witnesses of that. We're examples of that.
Yeah.
And now I've lost that. You know, it's like, oh, well, those gay people, they don't have any commitment. They
They just go around and be with anybody. You know what I'm saying? So I've kind of lost that sense of, success.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel the same thing. Like I thought we were at the onset of our marriage. I thought we were a good example, of a happy couple.
Mm-hmm.
And as things progressed, obviously, it turned out that we were not so happy.
Yeah, so it's the loss of that image of being a happy couple.
Yeah.
Or that belief that you were, That belief is shattered. It's gone.
Yeah, and the thought that you could actually be an example or something like that to other people, is now gone. I mean,
So you feel failure. I do.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously I felt like, look, I failed, But luckily, after reading this book, I see it's not only my fault, it takes two to tango. So... not only my fault.
Well, I think you guys have done an excellent job of coming up with, this list of losses that you've gone through or accepted or are still going through as a result of the end of your relationship. And I thought that since it's not always the most pleasant thing to grieve, and so many people avoid it, that we might talk about other symptoms of grief besides the most obvious one that we all know of, which is crying. So on slide 6, the header question is, what are some of the symptoms of grief besides crying?
Lack of interest in things.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's like, and then on the other hand, it's this feeling of, it doesn't matter if I lose anything else because I've already lost my heart and soul. I've already lost the greatest thing I could have ever lost, and so nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Do I dare use the D word, depression, for that?
Yeah. Go ahead. That's
okay.
What I feel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think... yes, I think the depression thing... is, you can call that, it's like the, it causes you to do a lot of, how can I say, there are lots of things like Berlin now says, you lose interest in things, you miss out on things, you're not really there, that sort of thing. You go through life in a mechanical fashion. But it's just depression, that sort of thing. And, so I think the depression thing is a big thing, if you, for sure, for me that is a big thing. What else is there? I think the depression thing, but also I don't know if sometimes I couldn't sleep, and I don't know if that form of depression thing. Sometimes I I don't want to eat, and sometimes I want to eat, you know, that sort of thing. So eat patterns are not normal. Your whole thought life, your thought patterns, that is messed up. You feel like sometimes, you know, in your stomach there's a, you know, how can I say? You feel a knot in your stomach, that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I'm walking around, you know, I'm functioning, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm not really there at all.
Yeah, and also together with a difficulty in sleeping, sometimes I want to sleep a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't even feel like, you know, getting up, that sort of thing, you know?
One of the symptoms of grief that I had, that I didn't know I had, until somebody pointed it out to me at work one day, was I sighed a lot.
Mm.
I sighed a whole
lot. Yes, you're right. Yeah. Yes, and maybe with a difficulty in thinking, you can maybe put absent-mindedness, you know, something like that.
This is a little thing that I notice when I'm feeling grief, and somebody says, "How are you?" The only thing I can say is, okay, you know, I can't say I'm good or I'm fine. The only thing I can barely get out is, I'm okay, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to capture that. Would it make sense if I just say, I'm okay?
Yeah.
And just put it in quotation marks?
Yeah.
That's all I can be.
That's all I can be is, okay. That's as good as it gets. And it doesn't even feel like it's fair. But you got to say something. You can't just say, well, I'm terrible, because then you would just start crying right in the spot.
Okay, so I'm changing to, I'm okay in quotation marks with kind of an ellipsis, you know, letting it die off. And they say, that's as good as it gets, but it's a lie, too. Because I feel worse than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I still go into the bathroom at work and tear up when I'm there. You know?
Yeah.
I just, all of a sudden, I just feel overwhelmed and, you know.
You know, one of the other symptoms that a lot of people I work with have is talking continuously about their situation.
Yeah.
I think one of the things is that it's difficult for you to when you're going through this to actually mean something to somebody else, to actually be okay. I can't work is the word that I to actually be of any you feel like you don't mean anything to somebody, you know.
Do you feel unlovable?
No, not really unlovable, but you
no.
you feel like you're not. Oh, that's, I don't feel like I'm unlovable, but I feel that I don't. Probably you could say that, but it feels like you cannot really contribute to somebody else's life. You don't know that sort of thing.
Oh.
You hear what I'm saying? Karen?
Yes. So...
You feel that you cannot really have a meaningful contribution in somebody else's life, that sort of thing, you know?
And I'm wondering...
Because you feel like you failed now, you know, what can I actually learn somebody else, you know? Because I've made this failure of my marriage, so how can I be, any help to somebody else? You can't actually.
I'm
so that's
wondering
why actually,
you
like,
go.
No.
Sorry, go ahead. This is echoing to me of being over responsible and over nurturing. I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying that there's an echo of it here.
you're probably right.
Because
okay.
No matter what happens, right, you're still really contributing to your son's life.
Oh yes, yeah, all right. I know that, yeah.
So, does that feel like a fair observation, or am I pushing it too hard?
No, you're absolutely right. It's a fair observation.
Okay. Then I'll be curious to hear what you think of it after you've had time to digest it a little bit and see how
yeah.
it fits.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other symptoms of grief that I think, Verlan, you almost touched on was saying that, you know, sometimes you go to the bathroom and tear up because you just get overwhelmed by the grief showing up, is rapid mood changes.
Oh, yes. 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 I know that with my children. Sometimes when they're with me, I'll get overwhelmed by my loss and grief, and then I'll immediately get frustrated with them about something, you know, irritated about something. And it would be something that if I wasn't in that feeling of loss, that I wouldn't be irritated about.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, grief can certainly set people on edge, you know. It's pretty normal. And, you know, kind of continue with that idea of being on edge, a lot of times as part of, you know, this whole grief process, there's a lot of anger.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And what about loneliness?
Oh, yeah. Funny that.
This is when I had suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah. And, you know, it really freaked me out when I had them. Because that, to me, was another example of how crazy I was and that I had completely lost my mind. And at the same time, it terrified me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned since then is that when you're going through this level of grief, that your subconscious is always looking for a way to make you feel better. And it's just flinging up every idea, no matter how far-fetched it is. What about this? And what about that? And what about the other thing? And how about this? You know, something's got to work here, you know, so it's pulling out all the ideas it can possibly come up with. And frankly, some of them are just stupid.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's inevitable to have the suicidal thoughts, but also the... Is this real? You know?
Yeah. A sense of unreality.
I might stop thinking about it. But I think did we lose Hugo?
I don't hear him now. Oh no. Yeah, on my conference monitor it says we did.
Oh, shoot.
Well, hopefully he'll be able to get back in. Technology is wonderful when it works, and it really sucks when it doesn't. Oh, no. Well, he's still got internet connection because he's still looking at the screen. There you are.
Hello, yes, I lost you for a moment.
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
We lost
you. Did you have to call back in, or did just the connection come back?
I called back in.
Okay.
I called back in. I don't know why I lost you guys, but here I am again.
Good. So you were saying that there's kind of a sense of unreality and that the world isn't quite the way you thought it was. It's just kind of a weird sensation when we lost you. Uh-oh. Anybody else online?
Hello, yes. I'm here.
Okay, good. I didn't know, Hugo, if maybe you wanted to kind of pick back up where you were when we lost you.
Okay, I can't remember. Where was I when we...
You were talking about kind of this sense of unreality.
Yes.
Quite real.
You know, I never had to, you know, before this, I never really had any suicidal thoughts. But obviously when you go through this thing, I think it's inevitable. You know, everybody gets those thoughts. You have some time or other. I don't think anybody can deny that. Sometimes you're going to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I start thinking about it, I never in my life even thought about this. Why is this? You know, why is this happening? I don't want to think about this. This is not really an option for me. You know. And then I stopped thinking about it. But yes, I think inevitably the thought crosses your mind. You know, when you're going through these things, it's going to happen one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and that's obviously, it just shows you the depth of the mourning you're going through, you know, that sort of thing, the grief that you are going through, that your subconscious is willing to bring that up as an option, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it can be really, really frightening to have it happen too.
Yeah. Yeah, once, you know, when it happened to me, I got really frightened. You know, what am I thinking of? This is not, you know, this is not real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got really scared when I started thinking about it. But, you know, and I thought, what about my children? I'm not going to even consider this.
Yeah.
You know?
Another thing that a symptom is that is related to the suicide thoughts are sometimes when I've been really grieving, I feel like I just want to run away. I just want to get away.
Yeah.
I just want to get away from all of it and have this all go away and start over again somewhere. So I just want to run away.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And I've already fantasized about, you know, where I'd go, you know?
Yeah. Fantasizing, that's a really good one, too. Where would you go?
Oh, I have a variety of places. I'd go to some monastery far away from everybody where nobody could find me, you know? Hide out there. Yeah.
I'm wondering too about self-criticism. Do you think that's a part of it?
Could be, yeah. Yes. Because sometimes you think about things, you know, couldn't I have done this better, or shouldn't I have done this, that sort of thing. So you start you know, evaluating your past behavior and, you know, actions and things like that. It could be self-criticism, but self-evaluation also, maybe.
What about guilt? Could it be guilt, too?
Yes, that could be guilt.
Uh-oh.
What?
Is Hugo still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, I couldn't hear you for a little bit. I'm sorry. I thought you were going out. Okay, good.
Okay, I think this is a fabulous list of symptoms of grief. Let me go ahead and read it out. Lack of interest in things, depression, which is kind of feeling not really there and going through life in a mechanical fashion, difficulty sleeping, difficulty with eating, difficulty with thinking, maybe even absent-mindedness. You can feel a knot in your stomach. Sighing often, responding, I'm okay, because that's as good as it gets, but it's also a lie because you feel a whole lot worse than that. Talking continuously about your situation.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling that you don't really matter because you can't really contribute to someone else's life in a meaningful way anymore and no longer be an example.
Sure.
Rapid mood changes, anger, loneliness, suicidal thoughts, a sense of unreality, a desire to run away from all of it so you can start over again somewhere else, fantasizing, self-criticism, self-evaluation, and guilt. That's a huge list.
I feel so normal. I just feel like I'm not crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's That's the whole point, Verlaine, is you're not crazy. That's why we went through this, honestly. Because any of these things on their own could be overwhelming, but when you're dealing with all of them at once, it truly does feel like you're crazy. I know, you know, that's exactly how I felt. I was really scared that I was going crazy because I didn't recognize myself with all of this going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Sometimes when you have these things, if you should have more than one of them all at once, you can feel like you're going crazy. I can testify to that.
Well, I'm going to share just a really quick story here. When I was going through my divorce, my ex-husband and I had never really fought during our marriage. And so we thought it would be okay to go ahead and continue to live together until we sold the house. Well, that turned out to be a really bad decision. And so I wound up moving out and buying another home before our divorce was final. But one of the things he kept telling me was, "You're crazy. I'm going to have you committed."
Oh my.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. That's like victimizing.
Yeah. So, you know, it was, you know, that seed was planted at that time. And when, you know, I got out and it was, I was still having all these different thoughts and different emotions and different experiences of life than what I'd had before, you can see why it was really easy for me to be terrified that maybe he was right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see why that didn't work out so good. That's bad.
So, what do you do when you got all this crap going on? Hopefully that's your next question. And really, the best way to deal with strong emotions, you know, the grief, which is what's underlying this stuff, is to acknowledge them and express them.
Yeah.
And so the next page is page 7. And the question is, how can you constructively express grief?
Yeah.
What works for you guys?
I'd like to go a place where I can be alone and then, you know, and then work through it.
How do you work through it?
Well, when I'm at work and something like this happens, then I go into my car and, you know, I shout, well, the thing to me is, I'm angry, and then I shout, and I try and get it out of my system. And if I want to cry, I can cry as well. I think. Sometimes I would like to call someone, but I, at that stage, I couldn't. But yeah, obviously I called you, Karen, the one time I felt really, you know, things are getting on top of me, and that's when I called you, you know. Other than that, I think the thing is to realize that you are in this tornado thing, you know, and you have to know that you are down in the dumps now, but it's going to be better. Things are going to be better. They can only get better.
And that is a definite technique for moving yourself out of the grief. right?
Yeah.
Keeping thoughts like that in mind. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, how do you express it? You know, so along the lines of, you know, you want to be alone, have alone time, and the shouting and the crying and the reaching out for help or support because you don't know of another way, right, to express it just
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
What?
And, sorry. Yeah, obviously I searched on the internet and looking, you know, for, you know, reading books about these things. But once you're in that, how can I say, those emotional moments, that's what you can do when you can do stupid things. And you actually have to guard against doing stupid things. I pray as well because I'm getting to the end of myself. You're getting to the end of yourself, and you know nothing else is going to happen unless you know some miracle. What happens if I will not be able to get through this on my own, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
You need help. I need somebody else's input in your life. That's why I reached out to you, because I know you went through this, and if you went through this, then obviously you can help me as well.
Hey, and you also told me it's because I was a chemical engineer you wanted to talk to me.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Oh, God. Verlaine, what would you like to add to this list? Of being alone, shouting, crying, reaching out for help or support because you don't have anything left in you to express it, praying.
Well, sometimes, two things. Sometimes I let myself look at myself in the mirror crying so I can really see what grieving is like. I not just only feel it, but I see it. And then I say to myself, I am connected to everybody who's ever breathed. I understand. I am going through it, and I have this personal experience that joins me to others who have gone through any kind of grief before. So I feel a connection, and that helps me to handle it.
That's great. I've never heard of it expressed like that before, but that's a very good point, because so many of us are visual.
Yeah.
And being able to observe your grief actually would help you process it a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, along those lines, I am somebody who is kinesthetic, where movement means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, stomping my feet. You know how you kind of get into a really good cry and you're on the bed and you're all snotty and just sobbing and can hardly breathe? And you just kind of start, well, this is not going to sound good, but it's the truth. You kind of start pitching a fit and writhing on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that can actually be an okay way to express a grief too, especially if you're someone who has that kinesthetic sense.
Yeah. No, I think that is something that would help for me. I've actually read about it, that you can actually get rid of grief by, you know, by doing something. For instance, if you get the punching bag or something, if you're angry, you get the punching bag and you punch the thing, eh? And that's, but I haven't done that. But I think it will work for me. That's the one thing. The other thing is what I've read about is that if you want to exercise, you know, if you feeling really depressed or whatever, you know, jump on a bicycle and go and, you know, chase out to the mountain or whatever, that sort of thing. But I know that will work for me. I can just feel it. That thing will work for me. So that's something new that I need to try. Okay.
Well, you know, I think maybe you had a taste of it last weekend when you went to, no, 2 weeks. Well, whenever it was, you went out to play golf with your son?
Yes, yes, yeah.
I'm wondering if you had a taste of that then. Yeah.
Yes, but you see, golf is a bit of a, my son is more the golfer type. I'm more of an impatient person, you know. I cannot, you know, I don't like looking for the balls and all those kind of things. I like my exercise in a very quick way or so. So I'd like to grind it, you know, that sort of thing. If I can get my running shoes on and go and run a distance or go and cycle, then I think that's better for me. Because when you're doing a golf, I think it's more sort of, for me, it's not really getting rid of grief. Okay, you get outside and you're supposed to be relaxed and that kind of thing. But I think the exercise, the hard exercise, sweating and doing something with your, you know, using your strength and that, I think that's the thing that can help me.
Yeah. You know, another way to get kind of that kinesthetic sense, right, is through journaling, if you do it by hand.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't catch you there.
If you journal and you do it by hand, not on the keyboard, but, you know, with a pen and paper.
Yeah. I think that helps. Your feelings. Yes.
Verlaine, I'm really fascinated by this looking in the mirror to cry, to observe the grief. No one's come up with that before, but I think back to it, and I would often look at myself in the mirror when I was crying, you know, just walking by, looking at, you know, the mess.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have the beautiful thought of connection that you have. That's a really neat perspective.
Yeah.
Well,
almost as if I'm grateful for the grief because I can be available to others because I know.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. How do you spell? Oh, there you go. I misspelled gratefulness.
Oh,
sorry. I thought it was confusing me. No, that really, I think, shows a servant's heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who wants to help others have a life experience and not feel lost and alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this is obviously a fabulous list that you guys came up with. And unfortunately, it's not something that we can just spend entire days doing, because life is still going on around us and we have other responsibilities.
Yeah.
And so our grief has to be managed. One of the ways that might be a good thing to think about is, you know, if your grief is becoming more unwieldy at any point, is actually scheduling some time to grieve. To just say, okay, you know, if I've got 30 minutes, you set a timer or whatever it is, and you just let yourself go there. Just to, you know, at least take the edge off, if not to, you know, start expelling some of the stuff that's causing it to overflow. But, you know, for me, you know, the grief can just jump out of nowhere, right? And then you need to be gentle with yourself, be patient with yourself, and sometimes excuse yourself from the situation that you're in till you can, you know, manage things a little bit better. And
yeah.
I think that regularly expressing your grief does allow you to be able to manage it better throughout the rest of your life. So it's kind of an interesting balance that you need to develop for yourself. You know, figuring out how to do this. I just looked at the clock, and it's already 6 minutes till. I can't believe it. I'm having such a good discussion with you guys.
Yeah, I was just looking at the agenda, and I thought, we're not going to make it here.
Yeah. Okay. So I actually added on questions at the end to go over emotions. And I added those on because I wasn't sure if we'd have enough material to cover Look at Me. I underestimated what we'd be able to create here. So those are easily set aside if you guys are okay with that.
Okay. That's fine.
I do want to go through the five stages of grief for sure. Just because if you kind of know what to expect, it makes it easier to get through. I don't know if you remember, you know, when we first started talking that first night, how I talked about feeling like I was blindfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what was going to come next on that runway roller coaster ride, you know, besides being tied up. But I find for me that if I have some idea of what to expect, it usually makes it easier. Sometimes there's a side of me that makes it worse because I imagine, okay, what's the worst case scenario? And then, you know, I'll say, oh, well, that's what's going to happen. But usually it makes it easier.
Yeah.
So Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is very, very famous for her grief work, and y'all probably heard of her before. You've probably heard of the five stages of grief. Yet not everybody can always say what they are and what order they're in, so that's why I wrote them up here for us. So the first stage is denial, and that's usually there's shock and numbness, the sense of the unreality, and there's some depression that happens here in this denial phase. The second one is anger, which hopefully is expressed outward towards others, although sometimes it's internalized. We'll talk more about that, I think it's next week when we talk about anger. The third stage is bargaining, which means something along the lines of, I'll do anything if you'll just come back to me. If I can just have my life back to the way it was before. The fourth stage in the book is called letting go. Everyone else calls it the depression stage. And I understand why our text calls it letting go. because depression sounds really horrible. It's like, holy crap, I have to go through more depression after I've already been through depression. but the truth is, it's not as deep and painful as it was at first. This second level of a depression, this letting go, as the book calls it, is where a lot of personal growth happens, right? Where you become stronger in yourself, when you seem to find a deeper purpose for living, and somehow you're able to make your life more meaningful for you. Right? And so it's really important, this phase, if you keep working through it and don't get sidetracked if there's, you know, another little touch of depression, because it won't be as long and it won't be as deep or severe in this phase. It's just kind of the last little vestiges of you creating your life and shedding the skin that you had to make it. You know, remember the calluses I talked about last week, right? You kind of shed those calluses so that you can be more you. That's what happens in this phase, first stage. And then the last one, of course, is the one where we all want to get to, is acceptance of the situation, where you're finally free from the emotional pain of the grief. So, in my opinion, based on some bad experience, partly, and also because of all the reading I've done, I think it's really incredibly important to work through these stages before you enter into another relationship.
Okay. Agree. That's good. Let's get out of it.
Yeah. And the reason why, I mean, I don't think you have to be 100%, but you want to be fairly well along your way, because then you're bringing less baggage to a new relationship. And
yeah.
A relationship is different from dating.
Okay. Yeah.
So, any questions about these five stages?
No, I think it's good to see that you're on some kind of a road here to recovery. For me. For me, that's good. A little light at the end of the tunnel, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at the rebuilding blocks in the book, right,
yeah.
You can kind of see where the rebuilding blocks fit into each of these. And, you know, through the divorce pit, right, that's probably along the first three, especially. And then when it gets kind of hard going again, you know, you kind of first accept a little bit of what's going on, but then you got to deal with, oh, right, now who am I really? What do I really want out of my life? Right, that's where you're in the letting go, that fourth stage. And then, of course, the acceptance is when you're at the top of feeling freedom.
Yeah.
Slide 9 was the questions that I said we'd be okay skipping. But if you guys want to answer these, you can. I don't know if you have time.
I have time. What questions are those?
On page 9. Verlaine, do you have time too? Or do you need to make sure we're done?
Pretty soon, because I'm getting tired.
Okay. Then let's,
you know what my bedtime is? My bedtime is 8 o'clock.
Oh, well, you were already up past your bedtime. Okay, then we're going to go ahead and skip these with you. And, Hugo, if you want to stay on the line later, we can come back to these, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Oh, it's okay,
no,
sweetheart.
Problem.
I understand about a bedtime and eyes needing to shut. No worries.
Yeah.
Okay. So, this week's homework. It's to read Chapter 8, Stay in Contact with Your Classmates.
Okay.
Continue your journaling. Write a goodbye letter. The book does a pretty good job of describing a goodbye letter, but I'm going to use some words around it too here, just so we're all on the same page. A goodbye letter is not something that you send to anyone. It's just for yourself. Okay? And what you do is you write goodbye to all of the things that you're saying goodbye to as a result of your relationship ending. So, you identified a lot of them, right, in the losses earlier.
Yeah.
But allow yourself the time to sit down, possibly cry. I cried a lot when I wrote mine. So have your tissue box next to you. right away, just pour out the grief and what you're losing. And then allow yourself to grieve as much as you need to this week. So if you do need to go, you know, and schedule some time to just let it out, please do, because writing this letter will sometimes make it come to the surface a little bit more than it has been. And so if you can use the letter as a catalyst to release some more of it, that's a really good thing.
Okay, sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good.
It may also be a really good idea to kind of reach out to each other as you get your letters written, just to say, hey, I did mine. just so, you know, you don't feel so alone. Because, anytime you have grief, it can feel very isolating. And I don't want you guys to feel isolated and lost and alone when you're doing it. The book also has an example of a goodbye letter in it.
Oh, okay.
And please bring them with you next week.
Okay.
And get as much mileage out of them as we possibly can.
Okay.
So, any questions about the homework?
No,
that's pretty clear.
Okay, good. Well, then we're on to the close. Would you all be okay with starting with the Serenity Prayer again this week?
Yes, no problem.
Okay.
No problem.
All right, here we go. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I really love this prayer. I don't think I've told you guys this before, but when I used to have my sleepless nights and be on the verge of a panic attack, I'd recite this prayer to myself again and again and again and again and again. Sometimes I'd actually fall asleep.
Yeah. But it also reminds you that, you know, on some things you don't have control, and you can't do anything about that.
Yep.
Can't do anything about that. And the only thing that I have control over, I can change. You know?
Yeah. And sometimes it can be confusing as to what the difference is.
Yeah.
Well, the last piece of our close tonight is the moment of gratitude. So would either of you care to go first, or would you like me to go first?
Ladies first.
Okay, Karen, go ahead.
Okay, I will go first. I am thankful that y'all have been participating full out again this week. I know it takes a lot of effort and trust and courage to do so. And I so appreciate that each of you has shown up like that again this week. Thank you so much. You're welcome.
Hello, can I go next?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. Yeah, I'm also thankful for, you know, for all of you turning out and adding to this experience, because it makes it so much richer. And thanks, Valan, for that, for your that perspective on the grieving in the mirror. That's something I'd never even thought of, you know.
And, for what? What was it?
What you said, if you cry and you look at yourself in the mirror.
Oh, in the mirror, huh?
Yeah. I think that I've never even tried that, and I think it's, for me, it's worth a try. I'm going to try that for sure next time. I'll schedule some time for me to do that. Yes, again, I feel, I'm thankful for attending this, because I feel better again, because I see that there's a road, sort of a map for me getting out of this minefield, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks, and thanks a lot, Karen, for all your guidance. I really appreciate that. It means a lot to me. It really means a lot.
Thank you for that. Well, I ditto everything that you both said. In addition to all of that, I feel grateful for this book that we have. I'm finding so helpful, and the whole program, the way it's set up, and the insight, I really appreciate everything about it.
I'm so glad you guys like the book so much. For me,
yeah,
it has been the best book that I've read about how to get through divorce. And I realize that it's kind of dated in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But the information is just laid out so beautifully that I can't find another one that does such a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see, principles never get dated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have in this book, is you have principles to work through this mess, and that's what works, and that's what's valuable of this book is it's really valuable. I really appreciate this.
Yeah. And you will appreciate it even more when you have a copy in your hand.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So then you don't just have all my highlights all over everything. You can put your own in.
Oh yeah, I've been writing all over the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll probably do the same, eh?
Yeah. Well, Verlin, okay. I know you're ready for bed.
Okay. All right.
Sweet dreams.
All right. Thank you. Good night, Hugo. Good night, Karen.
Good night.
Have a good rest.
Okay, thank you. Great. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Hugo. Let's go up to page 9 with the practice expressing emotions.
Like nine of, mm-hmm. or what?
Oh, did you? Well, I didn't. I don't know. Can you see what I've got up on the screen? Okay, or is there too much delay?
Just check, my computer just went blank because I didn't touch the screen, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, to let it know you were still there. It heard good night and it thought you were talking to it.
Okay. I see that, okay. What's happy and exciting thing that happened to you this week?
Yeah.
Okay. The exciting thing for me was actually, you know, when I went through those through the homework and I was actually very, you know, it was really against my grain to ask these things or to do these things. And when I did it, I think, or just before I did it, I was like skeptical, you know, is this thing, how's it going to turn out? And then when it worked, I actually enjoyed it, you know. I saw that I can do something else that I previously sort of didn't even consider doing, you know. So
wow.
I actually found that exciting, that these new, you know, it's like opening a new possibilities for me. So I enjoyed that. That was exciting for me. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful thing to have that new perspective of yourself and busting through an old belief.
Yeah, because it's like a boundary that you set for yourself, you know, and you,
mm-hmm.
it's like a mental or psychological barrier that you set for yourself. And once you see, but you, I can actually do this, you know, I should be able to do this. And
yeah.
Then when you realize that, it's quite exciting because you see that you've actually constrained yourself in the past, you know?
Uh-huh. And you feel free all of a sudden, don't you?
Yeah, you feel a sense of that, you know, you can actually get through this, you know, you actually improve yourself or even get better, sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's a sideways question after that one.
Yeah.
What was your first impression of your ex?
We actually met through, I had a friend, and he actually dated her first, and then, you asked my first impression. I think she was a really lovely person, you know. I thought that we had very much the same values and things like that. We could talk really well and communicate well, and to me she was a lovely person. I really thought that she was my soulmate, you know. Probably not at the first moment we met, you know, but as things went along and, you know, we got to know each other, and then we decided to marry. I asked her to marry me, but my first impression was this is a lovely person, and I don't know if. Just to keep it short, I think that's what I thought.
Yeah.
And I don't know, as you get deeper into things, I don't know. The way I see it, obviously, if after reading this book, obviously if I had done things differently, I don't know if things would have worked out differently. I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, and you never will, right? And that's where you need to let yourself off the hook.
Yeah, look, it was just now something that happened, and you cannot really turn back the past. But at least we can learn, I can learn from it, you know? And I can learn from it and not make the same mistakes in future, that sort of thing.
The next question is, how did you and your ex inform each other you wanted a divorce?
Okay. What happened is that, you see, after she started working with this person, she never really actually wanted to go for counseling. I actually arranged counseling sessions and things like that, and she was really likewise like, you know, it's your counselor and you probably talk behind my back and things like that, you know. So she never was really into it, that sort of thing. She never really bought into the process. But now, in 2015, in July, something happened. Over a weekend, I found out that she was with this person. She was gone over the weekend with this person. And then when she came back, I asked her, look, why don't you just move in with this guy? If you're going to do this behind my back, you might as well just move in with him, you know. Don't be open about it. Why are you so, why are you hiding things from me, you know? And then, obviously, we got into an argument, and then she has a friend, one of her lady friends, who is a Christian, and she actually suggested a counselor to my wife, and then my wife arranged a session with this counselor. And he had discussions with her, firstly, and then with me, one-on-one basis, and then he saw us both. He wanted to know what's my problem. And then I told him, look, my wife has this relationship with another guy, an emotional relationship, and if she cannot get rid of that, she cannot get rid of him, I need to stop this, you know. I cannot go on like this way. So what then happened is, I think she just wanted, how can I say, justification to go into a divorce. I never really think, you know, or I didn't feel that she ever contemplated getting back together or working on, because I never saw any commitment in doing that. Because if she had any commitment, I mean, she would have gotten rid of that guy. So I never saw that. And then what happened is, look, I'm a Christian, so therefore I don't believe that divorce is really an option. But if you look in the Bible, there are as a guideline, you can see in the Old Testament, nobody divorced. If there was infidelity, the guy got stoned that was involved in infidelity, and then obviously the spouse that remained behind was actually free to remarry, right? In the New Testament, it actually stipulates that, you know, if you married to a to somebody that doesn't believe in God, then you shouldn't try and divorce, okay? But if the one that doesn't believe in God wants to divorce, then let him divorce you, no problem, okay? So that's the line I took, and I said, I'm not going to divorce her. I'm willing to work on my marriage, you know? And then she said, but she wants a divorce. So then I said, okay, I can't keep you with me. I'm not going to force you to be with me. If you want to have a divorce, then so you should. And that's the way it happened. So now she's filed for divorce. The papers went through like that. And so 7th of March, I'll be standing in court for the divorce.
Wow, that's just like 3 weeks away, isn't it?
Yes.
It's coming up quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next question is, what were your feelings when you decided to divorce? When that was really real?
Obviously, I was like overcome by grief, because I really never thought that this would happen to me, and therefore I started crying, but that obviously this thing has been going on now a long time, so. It wasn't such a shock to me, but still, it's a lot of sadness, you know, a lot of sadness and grief. Yes, that's the feelings. Yeah.
And the last question is, what's the saddest or loneliest feeling you've had since you guys have decided to get divorced?
I think the moment that she said, look, obviously she's always been, how can I say, when we got into arguments and that, she would threaten me with divorce and things like that. But then when it actually got real, when she really said, okay, now we're going to have a divorce. I think that was the saddest moment. And also, I don't think the moment I got the papers was so bad, but the moment she said, and the counselor, we went to see the counselor together, and she said in front of the counselor, look, I want a divorce because this person is not going to change. You know, I had to change a lot of things. I always had to do this or that. I had to perform. I mean, so, and even if I performed, it didn't do it. You know, nothing. So, but she just said, no, nothing's changed. You don't change or whatever. So, at that moment, I think that was the saddest moment for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, it happens, and but it's good to be able to talk to somebody like you, because it really helps me a lot. Really encourages me, and you're a very good person, and I really feel encouraged by you. And, like, you really set an example, and I really appreciate that. Okay.
Thank you so much, Hugo. That was very, very, very thoughtful for you to say. I really appreciate you doing that. And that was another example of you expressing emotions very well.
Okay, thanks for that. I never thought I would be able to do that, you know, well enough or whatever. I didn't even know if my wife said I'd never had emotions, but yeah, okay.
You definitely have emotions.
No.
Yeah, and you can definitely express them.
No, thanks for that. Yeah. Okay.
How are you? Those were tough questions to go through.
Yes, they were. But that's good. It's good to talk about these things. You have to talk about the tough things, you know? So
yeah,
thanks for that.
It's part of processing it. And you know, experiencing the grief and getting it out, and so it's not there and it doesn't fester and take longer to heal than it needs to.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. The sun is coming up here, South Africa now, right?
I wonder, because I thought I was hearing birds in the background. It's like, oh, he's got sunrise happening.
Yes. Yeah, the birds are getting up and sunrise is coming. I can see the horizon is turning pink now, so yeah, I'm standing outside the house so as I'm speaking to you.
Very nice, very nice. So, I don't like leaving you in a place of all that discomfort. How are you doing? Are you still feeling a lot of discomfort from those questions?
No, I think it's good that you ask those questions, because it is things that you need to speak about, and I think I feel better, you know, after you ask me these questions. Okay. I actually feel good.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a great day. And I hope
I know you are. It's Friday. You're going to get to your weekend before I do.
Well, and I hope you have a good rest. Great.
Thank you so much, Hugo. I really appreciate you.
Yes, I really appreciate you as well. Okay, Karen.
Well, enjoy your beautiful sunrise.
Okay, have a good sleep and a good rest.
Thank you. I'll talk to you next week. Unless you need me sometime in between, you can send me an email, okay?
I'll do that.
Okay.
Okay, Karen. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.